the censorship that's being applied is being applied to those that are the truth tellers, those that are exposing crime, those that are like Tommy Robinson, who are exposing the pedos and the governments. And those people's voices are being silenced systematically across social media platforms. And that's the kind of speech that we should not be censoring. Those are the people that deserve to have a voice and to be unfeathered in their access to the community. And then the company just did a complete like 180, right? Like they started to abandon their principles of not censoring the internet and decided that they were going to start employing algorithmic discrimination against their user community, especially the content creators that were posting to YouTube. They were actively destroying their user base in order to achieve a political agenda that supported a candidate that had lost and was actively against a candidate that had won the Democratic vote. I mentioned machine learning fairness, which was a secret project that I found. And what I found was, you know, at the same time that the executives are telling the American people their commitment to an open platform, what I'm seeing is the rollout of this comprehensive, sophisticated re-ranking algorithm that is being slowly unleashed upon Google Search, Google News, and the YouTube queries. This was something that I needed to confront, that I couldn't be silent because my silence was colluding with what they were doing. And I decided that at that point that I needed to start stepping forward and I needed to start alerting the public to what was happening, you know, with Google and YouTube. And I had to do that no matter the cost.
Finally, I am able to offer Bill Andrews' amazing new anti-aging dietary supplement with TAM. I have been wanting this since I learned about its discovery approximately 4 years ago. At that time, it was not available as an oral supplement, but now, Define Time with TAM is here. This amazing product counteracts and suppresses the fundamental cause of aging, telomere shortening. TAM improves biological health in skin, vessels, brain, and bone. Specifically, it works to lengthen telomeres in cells, leading to younger and healthier cells. Currently, Define Time with TAM is the most effective anti-aging compound available in the world today. Listeners will receive a 5% discount using code SARAH5. Be sure to use this every time you buy. It will also work in conjunction with other offers. See additional research and learn more with the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have the Google whistleblower, Zach Voorhees, and he is coming on the show to explain what happened coming up to his disclosure and after. A lot of the behind-the-scenes things that happen at Google. We also talk about the zombie culture and the non-critical thinkers, not only at Google, but also in San Francisco and this whole far left. They're not liberal. Liberal is not the right word for them. It's this left weird zombie zone that they're in where they can't critically think. They can't look at facts. They refuse to look at any evidence that goes against them. I mean, people who are in the middle or who used to be liberal, I don't know how anybody can associate with them. And that's what we talk about, let alone being conservative or on the right or whatever that is. I mean, it's gone into zombie land, and we discussed that. We discussed the 950 pages of documents that he had with Project Veritas. I have links to that video and the 950 page documents on my website. You can also go to Project Veritas directly and get that. But I have all of that available for you as well on the show page. So if you're listening to this in podcasts or anywhere else, you can go to my website and get that. So before I get into this video, I want to thank my patrons for the continued support. Of course, this video is about the censorship and how it's affecting everyone in the world. But I want to thank my patrons. With all this censorship, I'm really thankful that you've created this pot of money that I can count on every month, because I never know what's going to happen. And I want to let you know that BitChute is growing quite a bit. I'm now on Library. I'm all over the place on podcasts. So you give me streaming podcasts on iHeartRadio, iTunes, all the places that it streams. all the places that are on podcasts. If I am not available on some podcast channel or some channel that you really want to see me on, send me a message. I would like to know. You can message me on my Facebook or on Twitter. Get me a message there. I don't want to release my email, otherwise I'll be bombarded, but I do. If you send me a message, I will give you my email. I'm not afraid to give you my email. I just don't want to have to go out to masses and be bombarded with fake robots and bots and then mess up my email. So I just want to let you know, let me know if I'm not on this channel that you want to be on, because you can find me all over the place. But let's get into this amazing interview with one of the American heroes, the world's heroes, risked their life and had courage, left a job making over $200,000 to do what's beneficial for all of us. And I thank him so much. And I hope you can thank him and help spread this. Keep him alive. Keep him in the spotlight. He needs to stay in the spotlight to keep himself safe. So let's get into my interview now with Zach Voorhees. Zach, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you, Sarah. It's very good to be on your show.
First of all, I want to thank you for having the courage to come out and do what you did. I have been fighting and struggling with the censorship for a long time, and I've been doing some shows. A lot of people I know have been going through the same thing. So when someone like you shows the courage and comes out and shows facts, I love the fact that you were able to do that, because it's so important for our country. It's fundamental for our country. So first of all, I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I want to say that, like, I'm not against, like, all censorship. Like, there should be some things that, you know, are not appropriate to society. But the censorship that's being applied is being applied to those that are the truth tellers, those that are exposing crime, those that are like Tommy Robinson, who are exposing the pedos in the governments. And those people's voices are being silenced systematically across social media platforms. And that's the kind of speech that we should not be censoring. Those are the people that deserve to have a voice and to be unfeathered in their access to the community.
Yeah, it's very disturbing to see people who are trying to expose crimes, pedophilia, or any other crimes that are going on, stealing of money, financial crimes, any kind of crimes, especially pedophilia, and we're getting censored.
It's very disturbing. Have you been censored?
Oh, yeah. I've been censored. I have 3 times the subscribers on YouTube and about half the viewership right now. I just don't
know. Wow.
That's just not possible. Yeah. And my Alexa rating is just tanked, but my actual traffic is soaring.
Interesting.
So I don't know what all that means. I don't know if it's very frustrating.
What exactly is an Alexa score?
When you go and you go to Alexa and you put your thing in, I believe Google owns that as well. It's for marketing, so they can see where your website rates amongst all other websites everywhere. And mine's just tanked. You know, I'm worse than I was 3 years ago.
That'd be really interesting. You should take a picture, a snapshot of that, and post it on Twitter. Because people are collecting all of this stuff. And I don't know if you saw Susan Wojcicki yesterday do an announcement about YouTube and how open the platform is. And she's just getting hit with evidence that, you know, YouTube is not a fair and free or open platform, that they're doing political censorship. And so,
oh, absolutely.
You know,
yep.
We whenever someone sees censorship, you know, in a graph, post it to Twitter, because there's a lot of people collecting that stuff.
Yeah, I did that last year. I posted the graphs. I've done multiple shows on that. And I could do it again. You're right. I just got to keep doing it. But it just comes to a certain point. You're like, geez. But let me get to you, because you're the reason you're here. And what made you decide to do this, to venture out and fight back, become a whistleblower?
Right. So this has actually been a really long time building. When I first started with Google, I've been working at Google for 8 years, and I first started with them in 2008. And then I worked with Google Earth f- for 5.5 years. Then I took a break to do my own startup, and then I came back to Google and worked in their YouTube office. So I've been at the company for eight and a half years, roughly. And everything was actually really great. Like, they pretty much stood up for their mission statement, which was to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible. But then something happened. You know, and what happened was Trump. 2016, Trump was elected, and then the company just did a complete, like, 180, right? Like, they started to abandon their principles of not censoring the internet, and decided that they were going to start employing algorithmic discrimination against their user community, especially the content creators that were posting to YouTube. And what's really interesting is that a paper appeared on their internal networks December 2016, right after Trump got elected, talking about the psychologically induced stress due to algorithmic discrimination. And this paper was part of the papers that I disclosed in my documents to Project Veritas, but they've been planning to do this for a while. But then it seems that they didn't. It sort of just came out of left field. And so they had to speed up their agenda and reveal that, yes, they actually were intending to sculpt all the information on the internet according to a political agenda. And because Trump got elected, I guess they had to move up their timetable. And slowly and surely, the mask started to be ripped off, revealing sort of the clown world that was lining underneath. And so I was sitting there, and at first I didn't want to believe this, because who would want to believe that a company would just invert and start doing exactly the opposite of what it promised its shareholders and to the community and to the politicians that it would do. But that slowly is what started to happen. They slowly started to invert. And every single time that they did it, it was through I mean, I guess it's not funny, but it was kind of hilarious in the excuses that they would use, which is the reason why I kind of call it clown world, right? The first one was that they started to talk about fake news and the desire to protect the users from fake news. And so one of the things that really alerted to me, like what was coming down the pipeline, was when I was able to access one of their documents. And this was available to all full-time employees. And I was able to just access their documents related to fake news and see this presentation that they were giving to the management team about how they needed to get rid of it. And some of the examples that they were using included, you know, the rumor that Hillary Clinton was running weapons through Benghazi in order to fund ISIS terrorists. And I was like, wait a minute, this isn't fake news. That really happened. You know, not everyone knows that that's what happened, but
the CIA, yeah, the CIA disclosed documents show that.
Yeah, right, and there's evidence, right? And so I started to think, well, they're just ideologically driven, and they're living in a filter bubble. But at some point, like, there's a lot of people now talking about the truth, and pretty soon the truth is going to leak out, and they're going to, like, step back, and they're going to be like, oh, yeah, fake news, it turns out we're not really sure what's really fake or not, and we'll back off from the silly idea that we had. But that's not what happened. They never, the truth there, even when it pierced into their, like, lives, you know, and what I mean is that there's a whole chorus of people talking about stuff like this and, you know, the Russian collusion hoax, and none of that was able to pierce through to them, through their echo chamber or through their consensus that they were using to make decisions, and everything started to get more extreme. Breitbart released a video showing the aftermath of the Trump election and one of these group meetings that the executive class had with the employees talking about what Trump meant to Google and YouTube. And the executives were so distraught over Trump winning, you know, and they actually started to cry on stage. And the reason that they gave that Trump won was because of racism, misogyny, bigotry. And they really just sort of ran the gamut on the deplorables. And so it was so I saw that this was heading for a while in this direction. and it didn't really seem to stop. In fact, it kept on accelerating. And then that's when I discovered the secret project called machine learning fairness.
Well, what do you think, you know, when you're looking at all this stuff, you said it couldn't pierce their understanding. I mean, they're just so delusional. Didn't they question at all the fact that if they're going to politically censor, that it's undermining any notion of democracy? Or do you think they're taking direction for a different purpose? Because at some point, an executive of a large major corporation should be smart enough to understand and question this. So for those of us on outside, to me, it's hard to believe they're that naive and that they're doing this on purpose for a bigger agenda. Because if they're that naive and incompetent, how could they run a large company like that?
Right. So what's really telling is, you know, in 2016, Susan, the CEO of YouTube, stated that their goal was to quadruple the number of user watch time hours that they had, from something like 1 billion to something like 4 billion. And by 2017, just a year later, you know, after all this thing with Trump happened, they had completely abandoned that. They were no longer talking about how to increase, you know, the amount of user traffic that they had, because they knew that they couldn't, because of the fact that they were censoring, demonetizing, and kicking people off of their platform. And, you know, we can ask ourselves, well, shouldn't Google be, you know, beholden to the principles and the spirit of democracy, which they so champion? And the answer is like, yes. But more importantly than that, they've got a fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders. And what I mean by more importantly is, I mean by in terms of law, they are bound to maximize shareholder value. They're not necessarily bound to uphold the principles of democracy. I don't think any corporation is beholden to that, but they certainly are beholden to the fiduciary responsibility of maximizing shareholder value. And what I saw was their abandonment of that. They were actively destroying their user base in order to achieve a political agenda that supported a candidate that had lost and was actively against a candidate that had won the Democratic vote. And that, to me, was reckless. Like, why risk everything, your entire company, so that you can go after the political opponent that you don't like the Democratic, you know, outcome of? So, you know, yeah, you know, besides the fact of all the things that they're doing in relation to their subversion of democracy, you know, at the very end of the day, they need to be answerable to their shareholders, and they just abandoned that. And it was just really a head scratcher. I just couldn't figure it out.
Well, I like that angle, because no matter what angle you take it at, there's real problems here. But some people question the you know, how our country is established and structured, and the only thing that matters is business. So, okay, and if democracy doesn't matter, which a lot of people argue that, then the shareholders and what you promise contractually to in your business does matter. There's no way they can get around that. And by demonetizing and getting rid of the people who are the biggest draws, you are undermining your own business.
You're undermining your own business, which means something serious is really going on. And, you know, I mentioned machine learning fairness, which was the secret project that I found. And what I found was, you know, at the same time that the executives are telling the American people their commitment to an open platform, what I'm seeing is the rollout of this comprehensive, sophisticated re-ranking algorithm that is being slowly unleashed upon Google Search, Google News, and the YouTube queries that are coming through. And the reason why Google said that they needed to do this was because there's a lot of problematic content out there. And what's really interesting is, you know, when I searched for Blacklist, one of the things that I found which was problematic was the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution of Ireland. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like, why are they filtering people searching for the amendments to their own country's constitution?
That's a big deal. That to me shows that they're undermining people's ability to even do basic knowledge searching.
That's right. That's right. They're trying to act as gatekeepers now, and they promised that they wouldn't. And they've classified themselves as a platform under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which says that they won't be acting as a censor. They won't be acting as a filter, because being a censor and being a filter means that you're acting as a publisher. And they have declared that they're acting as a platform, and they're getting all the legal immunities of being a platform, meanwhile enjoying the privileges of being a publisher. And so they're trying to have it both ways, the best of both worlds, and suffer none of the consequences of each. And that's just, there's something wrong with that.
It's pretty fundamental.
You know, it's pretty fundamental. But, you know, whenever there's money in like a large pool, you know, in a company, corruption always seems to like follow. And I'm actually pretty tolerant to like corruption. Like I've been around the block enough to know that corruption just sort of happens wherever there's money. The thing that was disturbing to me was the degree that they were taking this. And it was at one point where I saw them deleting words out of their translation dictionary in order to make Trump tweets sound crazy, was when it was elevating to a level of sedition and even possibly treason. And that's when I decided that this was something that I needed to confront, that I couldn't be silent because my silence was colluding with what they were doing. And I decided that at that point that I needed to start stepping forward, and I needed to start alerting the public to what was happening, you know, with Google and YouTube. And I had to do that no matter the cost.
Well, and let's talk about the cost, because you've been harassed and you were fired and harassed, and now
I wasn't fired. I resigned.
Okay, good. That's
I quit because of the censorship.
Well, good. That's honorable. But you've also been harassed, and you know, I've heard that you wanted, that's why I contacted you, is I hear you want to stay in the media spotlight because you have been told that whistleblowers can stay safe by being in the spotlight. So there's a lot of fear for just your safety. So talk about how you've been harassed and why you fear for your safety.
Right. So, you know, whistleblowers do not have a long lifespan. That's just, you know, standard par for the course. So, My first task that I gave myself when I decided to come forward was to disclose in sort of a minimal way. So I was going to disclose with Project Veritas, I decided that I was going to just release a few documents that showed people that this was going on and that they would be able to investigate further and see that this company wasn't what it said that it was. And one of the slides that we released through the first disclosure that happened in June was this slide where they were talking about how people like us are programmed. So the slide, it was like a four-step process, like the media is filtered and aggregated, couple steps, and then, you know, we're presented with it, and the people like us are programmed, and then that leads into the next, you know, start of the cycle, which is like content is generated by users. And so they're thinking that if they filter this content that people get, then we'll be programmed. And then by changing our programming, the culture inside of our head, then that will interact with the culture at large. And then they'll just keep on doing this iteration cycle until we get to some sort of like optimum state. And that one slide in itself was sort of like lit up everyone. And to help this, you know, event with Project Veritas be more impactful, they were able to bust one of their executive directors stating that Google shouldn't be broken up. And she said this like in a bar where she may have had a few drinks to somebody that she thought was like one of her, you know, someone on her team, an ally. And she's like, yeah, I love Elizabeth Warren. She's saying, it's like saying in Irish voice, I love Elizabeth Warren, bless her heart, but she's very wrong about breaking up Google, because these small individual companies, they don't have the size that we do, and together they can't stop, prevent the next Trump 2020 situation.
Whoa, what?
You're talking about election interference, and she's saying that only Google can stop the Trump 2020 election. Okay, that was a bombshell. And when people saw that bombshell, they got really angry. Now, what I'd hoped is, you know, because I had all of these documents, and I figured that Google might really at the end figure out that it was me, my hope was that they're like, well, okay, he made this media story, but we're not going to come after him because he's got all these other documents that would be damaging. So I was really content to lay down the sword of destruction and pick up the hammer of progress and get back to work, like building awesome things. But it turns out that that's not what happened. What happened instead is that Google decided to turn their law dragon and start engaging in the first steps of what could be only described as lawfare, which is like warfare, except you use the law in order to absolutely financially destroy an individual for speaking out. And so they sent me a letter from one of their law firms demanding to know all the data that I had retained, whether I retained it, who I sent it to, the list of everyone that I had sent it to, and then agree that they could come to all of my data, comb through it, and this is on my personal computers, my personal backups. And then through combing through all this data, they could figure out what was theirs and delete it. Now, what I realized is there was two things. You know, this was a crime, what they had done, and the reason why they were looking to comb through all of my data would be to, in order to destroy the evidence, because they don't want those crimes to be known to law enforcement. And the second was that whatever they found, they were then going to use and twist to come up with a fantastical tale to frivolously come after me in a criminal setting in a court of law. And the reason why I knew that they would do this is because it already happened to Kevin Cernacki. He was a whistleblower that preceded me. And he didn't blow the whistle to the public. He tried to do it through the labor boards of the state of California and the federal one. And so Google fired him and then took him to court, and he spent $100,000 defending himself against a series of fraudulent and false criminal complaints that Google has sent his way in order to try to shake him up and get him to capitulate. And, you know, he's spent $100,000 of his own money defending himself against these fraudulent claims. And so I knew that because Google was coming after me, that they were going to do the same thing. They would lie. They would say that I hacked into their system, that I grabbed these documents in order to undermine their legal strategy and give it to their competitors. And if they could prove that, then that would mean that I was guilty of a crime and I could face jail time. So,
but you got these documents in employee meetings. Was it?
It was just available on the public internal internet. Anyone that was a full-time person could just find these documents online. Like, that's how brazen they were. They just put it out there for anyone to find.
Now, in your employee contract, is it legal for you to share documents that they own?
Only when I'm blowing the whistle.
Okay, good. So it is legal. Because you're blowing the whistle on something they're doing illegally, so you're protected by law.
I'm protected by law, that's correct. But it doesn't matter because they're a $1 trillion company and I'm just a little guy. So
it does matter. It matters to everybody.
Yeah, it does. It does. Thank you. You're right. Yeah. It doesn't matter to them. They would still come after me. So I realized this was something that I needed to preserve the evidence chain. And so I took their laptop that they wanted, and instead of sending it to them, I sent it to law enforcement. Specifically, I sent it to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division under Attorney General William Barr. And I replied to them saying that documents could be, you know, were sent to law enforcement, and that I had retained certain documents. I think that they realized what documents that I had, because at this point, at the end of, the end of my employment, which was in June 2019, they pretty much had an idea of what was damaging because of what was being leaked out to the press in a drip, drip, drip. And it wasn't being leaked by me. It was being leaked by other concerned Google employees. And so, so I sent all this stuff to the DOJ, and I waited. And I was hoping that maybe that would just be the end of it. I wouldn't hear about it anymore. But then some insider trolled me on a low comment thread on Twitter and then outed who I was and then outed the fact that I had leaked their documents. And that is when I realized that, yes, Google understands everything that I've done, and now they've linked me to the disclosure by Project Veritas. And that's when I realized that I was in really big trouble now, because, you know, from Google's standpoint, what they don't want is that they don't want a, well, I gotta turn on the battery on this. What they don't want is that they don't want the public waking up to the scale of their disclosure. And they know that if no one knows that I'm the whistleblower yet, then they can like whack me. And it's gonna be a conspiracy theory that Google killed me, right? It's there's not gonna be any suspicion, because who knows that I was actually a whistleblower except for a handful of people that me. I certainly wasn't blabbing on about it that much to anyone that I had done this. So I realized that the cost to take me out was low and the value of taking me out was really high. So that's a really high return on investment. So I realized what I needed to do is I needed to change those two variables. I had to change that ratio. So first off, I needed to increase my profile, and second, unleash all the ammo that I had to the American public so that there'd be no value in taking me out, because removing me would just prove to everyone that this is who the type of company that Google is. They'd all know. It's like Jeffrey Epstein. Like, no one's buying that it was a suicide. So everyone would know. And second of all, it wouldn't achieve any of their goals because all of the documents have already been released. And in fact, if they do whack me, then those documents enjoy another media cycle. So, and people start digging in, and it just makes it worse for them.
Now, the documents that you released, I believe I have all of them that I think you released to the public. Are those the same or the entire documents that you gave to William Barr, or does he have more?
He's got all of those. So the same thing I've released to Attorney General William Barr, the same documents that I've released to everyone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So 950 pages.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, and it's pretty incredible how it documents the what they're doing. Now, when you did this, they also made you go through a psychiatric evaluation, or did they try to? Did you actually go through one?
They tried to. And what happened was, in order for them to establish that, you know, to make the argument that I've got mental issues, they first need to set up sort of a history of issues. And so they started down that path by calling in a wellness check. And they did this in retaliation because they publicly put up on my Twitter, and I only had like 300 followers at the time, but I put up this what's called a dead man switch, which for your audience, if they don't know, if they have damaging evidence on someone or some institution, then what they do is that they hand those documents off to someone who will release it to the public, and then they give that media organization a conditional embargo. So what I said is, in the case of my untimely death, you can release all the documents to the public space, okay? After I told James O'Keefe that, I went onto Twitter and I posted pretty much the same thing. In the event of my untimely death, all documents will become public. And I showed a very old picture of a person who was wrapped up by a dragon's tail, but he was still able to get one last strike into the heart of the dragon. And so my message to YouTube and to Google was that if you take me down, then the last thing I'll do is disclose to the public, thereby striking down and revealing your criminal empire, which I believe is going to cause them to collapse eventually one day. And so,
well, and I think it's go ahead, keep going.
And so so I posted that, and then a few hours later, they decided that they were going to call a wellness check into my house. Now, I got a heads up that they had done this because I'd actually given Google a decoy address. And so they sent police to the wrong house. And it was my friend's house. And they didn't believe that I wasn't there. And so they were asking, like, you know, where's Zach? Where's Zach? Where's Zach? No, we're not going to leave. Like, we have to talk to him. We have to talk to him. And then when they finally got convinced that I wasn't there, they sat in their car parked in front of the house chatting with someone over dispatch for a very long time. And so I got a call from my friend saying, yo, these police are really looking to get their hands on you. You should really, like, lay low. And so I was like, okay, well, wow, thanks for letting me know. 30 minutes later, I get my doorbell rung. And so I've got, like, a gate and, like, a door to my house. So the gate's on the outside and the door's on the inside. So they're ringing the doorbell right next to the gate. I didn't answer the door because I don't have to. That's my right as a citizen.